My name is Bonnie Landry. I'd like to welcome you to my podcast with my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, where we explore the questions about homeschooling and family life and how we can make joy normal.
Good afternoon, listeners. I have with me a super, super special guest, one of my favorite people in the whole wide world, and somebody who has been such a mentor for me over the years. And I'll explain how we met, and then it will all make sense. My friend Catherine Eames, who lives in Washington State and is just a master awesome person. And I just asked her if we could just interview about being awesome. So Catherine, welcome.
Thank you. Delightful finally to be able to do it.
I know. Just for the excuse of being able to talk, right? I don't know why the pandemic made it so we couldn't just pick up the phone and talk to people, but it did. What was that all about, you know? Even people who live near me that I saw regularly, it was like I was cut off from the world. It was so stupid. I don't know, right. Just all in panic mode, yeah. Or something.
Many stupid things.
So I will tell my listeners how we met, and then we can talk about being awesome, because that's one of your specialities. So Catherine and a friend of hers organized a Catholic homeschooling conference, and it was certainly the closest homeschool conference that we could get through from Vancouver Island. So we just started going to that, and we were going to that for a few years, and we got to know you a little bit. And then, well, two things happened. First of all, I said to Julia, your co-host of the conference, that, you know, could you guys do a conference? Could you guys do a speaker next year on challenging children? You know, because we're hearing about sort of all the good parts, and what about the challenging child who's really difficult to homeschool and relate to? You know, could we get a speaker in on that? And Julia said, well, would you like to? So I said, sure, yeah, sure. And so the following year, I did that talk and sort of got to know you better at that point. And then you guys moved to Canada for a year. You were quite close to us. And we visited back and forth a few times. And that's where we really sort of deepened our friendship, because other than that, prior to that, you had sort of been the host of the conference, but I didn't really know you well beyond that. But what was really incredible for me was the fact that you just got so much done. You were such a doer and such a supporter of people and such a lover of people, an upholder of people, young people and young moms and all of that. And I think that it's something that we're lacking. And I think part of the reason we're lacking that is just many times a lack of confidence in how do I do this? How do I get things done? How do I support people? How do I uphold others? And so that's something that I'd really just have appreciated in you so much. And you've been a real source of mentorship for me in that way. Right. So I'd like you maybe just to tell my listeners sort of what it is you do, what kinds of things you do. And then we'll sort of talk into the sort of the how and the why.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you. Those are beautiful remarks. So I am blessed to be the fourth of 11 children. And my mother, when she was pregnant with me, had this idea that we could appreciate our maternity, our pregnancy, our baby that we are growing, and we could pray to the mother of Jesus in her pregnancy, because she understood. So it was when she was pregnant with me, she had this idea to design a pregnant Madonna, and she wrote a prayer, and she got a approval from it. And one of the priests or bishops that approved it thought that maybe the Madonna of the pregnant Madonna was a little indelicate, and he suggested that she change the name to Madonna of Maternity. So I thought that was hilarious. But yes. She was an artist, and she was interested, and in the later years of her life, she did a public TV show, and if she met you on an airplane, and she just asked you what you were doing, and she thought what you were doing was cool and should be shared, that she would invite you onto her show. And one of the people that she had was a woman who thought that comedy in comedy clubs, that it was too blue or too off color. And she started a thing called Clean Comedy. And the idea was that she would teach you how to do comedy. And how they did it was you reached into your life and you came up with instances in your life, and then they helped you to write it and to be able to deliver it. So in the year of her death, 1997, she was a clean comic. And she had these, and of course, a lot of her life was being the mother of 11 children. So the last year of her life, she was our speaker at our leadership dinner as a clean comedian at our conference in Seattle. It was fabulous.
I wish I had seen that.
And she also, that same year of her death, she was also voted by the beauty contest participants of like the grandma Miss America, only it was for grandmothers. She was voted the most, you know, congenial personality. So I have this fabulous heritage of being open to ideas, and if something sounds interesting, running with it. So some of the things that I and my friends, including yourself, have done include, we adopted wild Mustangs from the Bureau of Land Management in the United States, and that was a communications exercise for our teenage children to learn body language and how the horses communicate with their bodies as opposed to domineering or power. We've done the homeschool conference over the years since 94. We were inspired by Father John Harden, and he basically said that the family is God's plan for education and for formation. And it's we, the parents, who decide who gets to be around our children. So yeah. we would pick those particular people who we thought were extraordinary and were wonderful, and then we would allow our children to be in their company.
Right.
So my background before, I was the president of a mortgage bank in Walnut Creek, California. And then when I married John in 1990, we moved to Seattle area, Seattle, Washington. And I chose to stay home with our two youngest children and home birth and home education, all that stuff. So mm-hmm. my getting things done, inclinations, and my high ideaphoria and appreciating a lot of different things converge. And then I've just had a lot. So right now, the project that I'm working on, this is really cool, is a...
It always is.
An outdoor, won't be exactly life size, but in the Old Testament, God gave Moses some instructions to make a tabernacle. And it was basically a big tent. And in this tent, the priests would go and they would light the candles in the 7-branch lampstand. And they would have the bread, one loaf of bread for each of the 12 tribes. They would offer sacrifices. And all of these things were done in a courtyard that was made of a fence out of fabric. Because they were nomads and they could pick everything up and they could travel because they were in the desert approximately 40 years. And right. So it's rare to be able to see an exhibit, outdoor exhibit, of the Old Testament tabernacle. And so my friend Julia, whom you know and love, we all do, worked on this a few years ago, and the parish that she and the other teenage kids who worked on it, the parish no longer needs it. They're going to, they want that storage space to be made available for some of those homeless people who might need accommodations. So
right.
they've asked her to take them. And so she's in a different phase of her life. And I said, well, I can use it over here in the Spokane area because we have to build a new church and we have to raise maybe about $2 million. So I thought this would be really cool. We'd be good neighbors. We could let the other churches come over and use the exhibit. They could use it for their vacation Bible school, whatnot. And then we could, in summertime only, because the winters here can be kind of brutal. And so that's what I'm working on now. And I'm finding out that there are very few exhibits in the United States. And so this would be kind of cool. So a family or a homeschool group or a scout troop or whoever could book it. It could also be open to the public when someone hasn't reserved it. And then they can just enjoy it. And we can have some materials, books and souvenirs and that kind of thing.
fun.
Because one of the things that I did with our teenage daughters was I did the Daughters of the Living Ark. And what that was heirloom, we made heirloom quality items that they could put in their hope chest, whether they became a nun or whether they became a mother. And these would be really cool things. So, for example, ceramic plates, beautiful with the liturgical year cycle colors on it. Mm. Well, we made a little Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark in the Old Testament was made of acacia wood and covered with gold. And then the Ark of the New Testament is Mary. And of course, she's made out of flesh. And inside of her, she has our Lord. So we had made these gorgeous gold boxes. Each girl made one, and it was really fun. So we could have things like that available for purchase or also craft opportunities if the people wanted to make their own. Right. So it's a big project.
Right. Okay. Yeah, but make it simpler for people. Because I think that a lot of times that's what is required, is people sort of need things kind of put together. I mean, I'm just a goofy example from my life, but I'm not a crafty person at all. And those craft kits that you can get from, you know, Michael's or wherever, those were real lifesavers for me, because my kids really wanted to do crafts. And so if I got the kit and everything was there, that made it simple and I could actually pursue that, right? Otherwise, there would have been no crafts in my house.
Very good.
Yeah.
That's a very good suggestion. Yes.
Simple, right? Keep it, help people make it simple. The instructions are easy. Wow, that's cool. I'm just going to share a story that you, just in terms of sort of talking about things and talking about interesting things and getting things done. So you had come over to our house to visit, and it was about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months before my mom died. And at that moment in time, you and John's big conversation was about death and planning for your own death and, you know, being realistic about mortality and what we should plan for, so we're not leaving it in other people's hands, and so that you get to be in charge of what goes on in your life, right? Or in your death. Anyway, so you always, when you come to visit, you've always brought a bag with whatever idea you are presently working on or ideas you're presently working on. And so you walked in the house and you said, okay, I brought a couple of different ideas to talk about. So I was wondering if you guys would like to talk about death. So both Albert and I said, no. And you said, okay, putting away the death stuff. So topic number two came out, whatever that was. I don't remember now. Okay, so we're going to spend the weekend not talking about death, but about some other thing. But then my mom died. And you ended up coming and visiting that same, like within a week or so of her passing. And you walked in the door and I said, I hope you brought your death stuff because I'm ready. So it worked out well, but here's an idea. No, if you don't want to talk about that, that's okay. We'll talk about something else. But you know, death was a project, right?
That's right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Very, very.
For most of us, we're not going to adopt wild Mustangs, right? That's not going to happen. What are some things that you've done, or you know other people have done, or things you might encourage young parents or people with young families to take a look at about things that they could do that would be interesting, wonderful projects?
Two things come to mind right away. I'm an Eastern Catholic, so although we follow the same calendar as the Roman Catholic Church, our expression of things sometimes is a little different. And I think one of the best things that we ever did was going to daily matins and divine liturgy. And in that process, we did that for years. In that process, the maps of where these saints walked, the scriptures, the psalms, all of the, and we sing everything. So the children absorb not only the content, but they also absorb the beauty in the music. So that would be one thing that I would say, if you have access to, and there's probably online things now that people can join for the liturgy of the hours or any prayers that they like to do on a regular basis. The children are absorbing everything. Okay, that being said, there is a product that I will recommend, and it's put out by Sophia Press, and it's a series of posters, a subscription. You can have a subscription, and this wonderful couple in the Midwest in the United States is doing all the artwork, and they are producing these posters that come out. It's not the calendar as in the month of February or the month of March or the month of April, but it's literally the liturgical season. It looks kind of like a calendar but it's all pictures, and the mother, the wife, is doing the artwork, and her sister and her husband are big supporters. It's fantastic. Now, when that particular season is finished, it will never repeat again, because it won't always be on the same day of the week.
Right.
But literally the size of each day,
right,
the width, the height, the kind of border that it has, all of those things have been designed, and they are meaningful. And all the family needs to do is just subscribe to the subscription. And then I think she sends out, or they send right out, it's approximately 3 months at a time. So I think you get four shipments for the year. But they are liturgical seasons. And it is so rich, and it is so beautiful. So with that, and a good Saints of the Day book, and a good set of maps, and a good timeline, whoa, you could access for your children an incredible familiarity with history, with geography, and with the beauty of brainiacs in the church. These are lay people that just did phenomenal things. So that would be what
right
comes to my mind. And it doesn't really matter if you're a Catholic, because the history of Christianity is so broad, and everyone can benefit by these extraordinary people that lived at different times in history.
Can I comment on that just before you say your second idea? One of the things that I think is really important for people to know, and you know, this is something you've just, you know, have always known, that when we don't have to think about that, if you go to the Divine Liturgy, or if you in doing the Liturgy of the Hours or whatever, it doesn't have to be one more subject that you're adding on to everything else. It becomes the subject. This is how you learn your history. This is how you learn religion. This is how you learn geography. This is how you learn
perfect
all
yes
the things.
That's very
art,
well said.
Everything. And so every time you open it, whether it's through a book or paintings or the liturgy or whatever, those are your learning opportunities, and not adding one more thing into your day, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
It's just so much more organic, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Another thing that I would recommend is this fantastic program available practically for free. It's called 1,000 Hours Outdoors per Year.
Okay.
Do you know about
this? I've heard of it, yeah.
So on the website, they have downloadable for free charts that you can track the hours by child or by the whole family. Everybody in the family, grandmas, aunts, uncles, can be a part of it. Everybody gets the overall picture. That if you spend if your goal is to spend 1,000 hours outdoors, and this is not on a screen.
Yeah.
This is walking around. You could be working in your garden. You could be walking down a trail near your home. You could be collecting samples of flowers or whatever you're doing. It doesn't matter. But on the wall, you post one of these blank posters, and then you start filling in the hours. And it doesn't matter when you do it. It doesn't matter how you do it. In the snow, in the sun,
wow,
you know, it is fantastic. And then, of course, anybody in the family can participate. When the child goes on vacation with the grandma, when the child goes on an outing with one of his friends.
Right.
And even from when they're tiny, tiny young. So I highly recommend that. And just so people know, 1,000 hours is approximately the estimated time many children are on screens.
Wow. Isn't that terrifying?
So that works. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So that works out to, you know, something like 2.5 to 3.5 hours a day.
Right.
So if you approached as a goal 1,000 hours outside, many wonderful things happen. So some of my daughters and daughters-in-law are on that program, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, and again, something that, okay, suddenly here's your science study or whatever. You don't have to, and you don't even have to say that. Okay, we're doing science now. You don't have to say that.
Nope.
You just experience it, right?
That's right.
And if you spent 1,000 hours outside in a year, there's no way that couldn't qualify as a full year of science, right?
Exactly.
Whatever you're doing, even if you're digging worms up or whatever.
Right? That's exactly right.
Because
just think of gardening.
Yeah, it leads to questions, right? It leads to wondering,
right.
And that's what science is all about. It's about wondering.
Yes,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, those are great ideas. Fantastic ideas. I want to talk about being awesome for a few minutes because you're so awesome. And I think you helped me to be awesome. I think you helped me tap into my inner awesome, really. I mean, I think that's one of the things. It's a real gift of yours.
And you're awesome. Your inner awesome is bubbling out.
it's a beautiful thing to encourage people to be the fullness of who they are, right? And there was a few different factors in my life that helped me to recognize what my gifts and superpowers were. And I think that it's something that you are naturally inclined to do. I think now I'm naturally inclined to do that, is to encourage others to be awesome.
Yes.
Right? And I think sometimes it just takes saying, it's like, wow, you're so amazing at that, or you're so patient, or you're so energetic, or you're so capable, you know, and recognizing the qualities that they have. And I think that one of the things that really summed this up with, you know, in conversations you and I had, was actually the what's the program called, the Siena Institute, Called and Gifted.
Yes.
Let's chat about Called and Gifted for just in a few minutes that we have left, because I think that that's something you do naturally. It's something you draw out of people. But how do people, not everybody has a you in their life, right? And so how do we access what our gifts are, what our natural and supernatural gifts are? And I think maybe that's a good place to start, is just talking about Called and Gifted as a resource for discovering ourselves.
I would like to first point out that the natural gifts are wonderfully identified with a tool called Johnson O'Connor. I would say that's natural. Anybody can benefit from that. And then the supernatural gifts, Called and Gifted, the Siena Institute, they are identifying charisms. And that word is charisms, and the word means gift in Greek. So the charisms are, we would say, the gifts of the Holy Spirit that are given to each person to be shared in the body of Christ. So Johnson O'Connor is excellent for identifying natural, and Called and Gifted is excellent for identifying the supernatural. So these particular charisms can be identified in other people, different saints that have lived before us. And you can take the little testing assessment tool. I believe you can even buy it online and take it online. You can listen to a DVD course or an online course. You can go to an in-person little workshop and to learn more about the charisms. And the idea is that in the body of Christ, all these charisms are present, and in different people, they are stronger in different people. But we need each other in the body of Christ, that all these charisms are necessary. And God uses them, for sure. Some of them are more modest than others. Some people prefer to be out of the limelight, and they want to set up the chairs, for example, if there's a workshop that's going to be going on, and they don't want to be on the committee and they don't want to plan the thing, but they're happy to jump in and help put things out. There are some people that are fabulous in the teaching charism, and we have that noted position in our church called the Doctors of the Church, where we actually recognize people who are extraordinary teachers. And out of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of saints, we have something like under 50 doctors of the church, which is amazing. And then there are service charisms, and there are academic charisms for research and studying. And they're really, really good. And to your point, I think one of the most important things that each of us can adopt as a life choice is to say something positively. So I say this because when you are in church sometimes and you see a young family and there's a child who's acting very wiggly and standing maybe where his mom doesn't want him to stand and blah, blah, blah. Well, always, if you can, take moments to say what is positive. And if the mom's really frustrated and she doesn't know exactly maybe how to get the child to comply, you can say, "Here, honey, stand right here," and then point to the ground exactly where you want the child to stand. Or you put your hands maybe on the pew in front. You say, "Put your hands right here, honey," because what you're making a habit is you're expressing and encouraging and guiding what you do want. And so many people.
Yes, and exactly. So many people instead of harping about what you don't want. Yeah.
You know, be quiet or don't this, don't that, don't stand here, don't stand. But, and they don't realize that the brain can't process a negative. So the brain just eliminates the not.
Yeah.
And it pictures what you're talking about. And so if you want them to stand in a certain place, then that's what you want to say. And I would say that's the most positive thing that would be the most effective thing that I could share. And in being positive and in that encourages people so much, and it gives them a teeny tiny little baby step that they can do right now. And it's helpful. And it also is helpful for the child.
Exactly.
Or the husband or the wife.
Oh, for sure. And so one of the things, like, just sort of when we talk about charisms, and this is what the whole thing about the Called and Gifted program is, that it's all positive, because all of the charisms are positive. So it's not saying, you know, you shouldn't do this. You know, it's just saying, what are your, where are your spiritual strengths, and how can you use them better? And one of the things that, again, we don't have to feel like this is something that can just be overwhelming to us. Okay, I have to do this now and figure out, you know, how, what my gifts are, and I have to give more, right? No, you just start with your own kids. Like exactly what you're saying, you know, tell them how to do something or where to do something as opposed to what not to do, right? And that is how we tend to respond. In, say, our spiritual gift is energy and creativity, right? That's something that we're really strong on. Then focus on that. Or if your spiritual gift is teaching, you can have other kids over and put on a co-op or whatever. You know, if you can handle a big group like that, or if you have strengths and sort of recognize what they are, because we often don't know what our strengths are. So this just helps us with direction, but start in your own family to practice those things. And what I found, and I'm sure, you know, most of the people who take this program would find in this, is that these, when we recognize what our strengths and gifts are, we become energized by them and we grow spiritually from them. You know, sometimes we're doing jobs that are not necessarily our gift. They're somebody else's gift. And we get weighed down. We're bogged down.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And to habituate the term gift into one's vocabulary is a good idea. Yes.
A really good idea.
Yeah, very good idea.
When we are, just a, maybe this can be our wrap-up question, but when we look at our children, how can we interact with them where we are bringing their gifts to the fore? What are some ways that we can be positive with them and make them sort of build awareness about their own gifts or recognition of their own gifts?
Okay. I would say the first technique that's very helpful is modeling. So if you're helping the child to ride a bicycle, if you're helping the child to write a university term paper, you model the pieces of action, and then as the child does them, you get a sense of how comfortable is he, how adept is he at that, and then you have something to point out. Oh, that is so good, the way you did such and such. And then you could even call another child over and say, look at this, what do you think? And then the first child realizes, oh, I'm good at that. Right. Because my sibling is watching me. My sibling is learning from me. My sibling is laughing with me, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I would say modeling it first, letting the child practice, and then giving him opportunities to experience responses in others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very good in public speaking. It's very good in tying a knot if you're going to go camping. It's very good in putting gas in the car if you're pulling up to the gas pump, you know?
Yeah.
So each of these things, we're all ignorant until we learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And once we see it demonstrated in front of us, we can then copy it, and then we can realize, ooh, this is a better way to do it than the way my mom did it.
But you know, also for discipline, right? It's a skill or a skill set. And so in my mind, discipline has never been different than school subjects or learning how personal hygiene or whatever. It's all the same thing. It's a skill or a skill set. You shouldn't just know any of it, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so model, right? It's a great tool, our best tool, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's delightful when you really realize the child is better at it than I am.
No kidding, eh? Oh, that's great. I would like you to finish off by just sharing your best piece of advice that you can offer to moms with busy families in any capacity, whatever topic or area you think is most important.
Sure. Well, I would say to include as many people in the family as you can in your prayers. Some prayers are personal and they're quiet and they're when you're alone, but so many opportunities exist for richness. And I would say it's a way to grow joy in your family. Don't ever be afraid to share with them something really cool, even if it was from a different century, and even if it was from a different part of the world.
There's just so much coolness in the world.
There's so much coolness. There's so many interesting things to talk about and for people to share. And every single day, I learn things from the children that I didn't know. Every single day.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Especially the first time that happens when your children are just getting to that age where they'll learn something independent of you. You know?
Yes.
And it's like, wow. Wow. I'm doing something right here if you're learning independently.
Oh,
thank you so much for your time, Catherine. This has just been beautiful.
Thank you for all you do, Bonnie. It's just wonderful. Give Albert my love.
I will. Okay. God bless. Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.